This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been really disappointing for all of us in the organization. It's been very difficult, and we have not performed to expectations. So we all feel that. I feel that. You know, I look at the team, look at things, and, you know, with the offense, the position player group, I think we've had obviously a lot of health issues. We've had some guys individually with just literally tough luck on the balls that they're hitting. And then we've got a lot of players and guys with long major league track records that just aren't performing to their norms. So all those being the case, I'm really optimistic, and we're optimistic that we're going to work out of that, and things are going to get better.
That was Mike Elias Friday afternoon talking about the team's ugly start to the season. They were 12-18 at the time he spoke. They're now 13-20. Jason, what'd you think of that?
Well, it had to happen. This is not someone who has a policy of not speaking in season or anything like that. And he has been known to pop his head out. I kind of feels like once a month or so, and address some pressing matters. Sometimes it's in response to injury situations, and other times it's just because, well, it's his baby, and his fingerprints are all over all of it, and this baby's had a lot of poop in its diaper.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. So, yeah, there had to be some accountability. Now, I also found it interesting, as he let it sort of revealed through the course of his interactions on Friday, that he had had it sounded like a pretty substantial discussion with ownership as well. I don't know whether someone in ownership suggested, hey, Mike, now would be a good time to step up and take some of this off the skipper's plate. Like, you're saying you support the skipper.
We're going to get to that.
Okay. Then, like, you need to step up and start taking some ownership for this, because, like, you look like you built a bit of a fraudulent baseball team here. And if you want to just hide behind injuries, you can. But, like, we can go through this division and talk about who's been dealing with injuries. We can go through baseball and talk about who's been dealing with injuries. And not everybody is sitting there with a 390 winning percentage. So I don't know the impetus for this. It had to happen. Does he speak in a manner in which it's going to fire anybody up to do anything? No. Does the team tend to step in its own poop after he opens his mouth? Yeah. But he had to do it.
They didn't that night. Mean Dean.
Mean Dean. Mean Dean was dealing.
But yeah, it needed to happen. He took accountability. Was it a different tone than the last time he spoke? Yes. But like you said, what's done is done. The bulk of, yes, you can make trades and see it, but this is the team they're rolling with. This is the situation.
Jason mentioned the Brandon Hyde part of it. I do want to point out a friend of the show, Jim Bowden, was just on Foul Territory saying he'd fire Brandon Hyde. Here's Mike Elias with the dreaded vote of confidence.
Very confident in Brandon Hyde. I think that, you know, you look at the job of a major league manager. I mean, it would take me 45 minutes to talk about everything that goes into the job of a major league manager. But when things are going great, and they have at times here, we've had that. And then when we're experiencing failure, it's really important in that job and in my job too, to be consistent with your approach. And he's doing that.
We did see, I forgot where it was, one of the beat guys had a piece with a lot of the players defending Brandon Hyde.
I think it was Jacob Calvin-Meyer.
Yeah, friend. Yeah, IA Hall of Famer Jacob Calvin-Meyer writing about the defense of Brandon Hyde. But usually it's the skipper the first to go when things go poorly.
Yeah, it is. And the closer we get to Memorial Day, if the caliber of play doesn't pick up quickly, the more we're going to hear. And look, I think he was one loss away from being fired on Thursday, no matter what Michael Elias is saying publicly on Friday. I think had they got their brains beat in one more time by the Yankees, whether it was Michael Elias or somebody above Michael Elias saying you better do something, I think something would happen. I would also point out, because a lot of times in this town we get stuck in our own little sort of cocoon, Texas Rangers, I thought they'd be the best team in the American League. A lot of people thought they'd be the best team in the American League. A lot of their young hitters have regressed. They waived Leody Taveras, who was a big, decent part of their World Series win, and they fired their offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
So, like, things happen. People make changes. Like,
they're 17 and 18.
You can only bank on the future being better or you having all the answers or a guy or two getting healthy as the difference. Like, it's go time for some clubs. And the Rangers, you look at how often they score three runs or fewer, they're right there with the Orioles.
But that's just not how they operate, though.
You need to change how you operate.
Was good for the early stages of a rebuild. As expectations have ratcheted up over 3 years, it's not just going back to last June 20th. We can go back multiple trade deadlines. We can go back multiple off seasons. There has not been the necessary urgency with anything this front office does at the major league level, pretty much ever.
More from Mike Elias speaking to the media on Friday. He was asked if he second-guessed any of the moves he's made.
I think this is my 18th year in Major League Baseball. A lot of that in scouting, the draft, international scouting, and then this job. I am constantly second-guessing, analyzing, looking at things that I've done, that I didn't do, the way that I did them, the processes, the outcomes. I'm doing that all the time. It is, it's a big part of how I go about my career.
I'll say this. Everybody thought this pitching staff would stink, and it's been worse. So,
what adjustments has he ever made? You can even go look at his first-round draft picks and what he keeps doing. And we'll see if Honeycutt becomes a thing or if Bradfield becomes a thing. But, like, what's changed? Clearly, like, he's made plenty of mistakes along the way. The guy's been here 6 years now. Where's the introspection, allegedly? Where has that resulted in bringing in new people from outside the organization who have different backgrounds? Where has it resulted in changing their overarching beliefs? Where has it resulted with you producing one hitter who actually does get on base a lot at the major league level?
How about a pitcher that you drafted make a debut?
But, like, how has it changed what he cares about in roster construction? Like, dude, if you're sitting there at night thinking about what could I do better, and it's not going to your boss saying, I know it's going to suck to pay Charlie Morton this other $13 million we still owe him to go away, but boss, I bleeped this one up, and if we want to salvage the season, we got to start there. Like, what contrition has he ever shown outside of words and pablum?
Pablum. I do love that word. One more from Mike Elias. So I'm talking about him being the guy to blame and being confident they'll turn things around.
With the starting rotation, having injuries, and also starting so poorly and putting us in a bad spot because of that, you know, it is difficult to contend with that level of injuries. But even that aside, you know, they've had a poor start, and, you know, that's my responsibility. And I'm in charge of baseball operations, and, you know, when we have a bad record to start the year, that's my responsibility. But we are all working very hard, and we have a lot of faith in this very talented group. And piece by piece, step by step, we're going to get guys healthier. We're going to get guys performing more to their norms. If there's something that we can fix with a player, we're working on that. And I'm very optimistic and confident that we have a lot better baseball ahead, and we're going to play like the way that we should be this season.
There's some hitters you could argue could be very talented. I don't know if you can look at that starting rotation and say it's a very talented starting rotation that they put together.
I mean, look, that like we talked about earlier in the show, I think Eflin will be here probably sooner than he should, and they'll put a lot of eggs in that basket. I'm not playing the games with Wells and Bradish and Grayson. I mean, they may be, but like I think you're really over your skis to think they're going to get a kid back from multiple setbacks or Tommy John and get him going, because they've shown no ability. They couldn't do it with John Means. They couldn't do it with established pitchers.
And anything you get from those three guys is a bonus.
I don't think you're getting anything from
him. But like I said, you shouldn't expect.
Certainly can't be banking on it. But like he just talked about learning from his mistakes. One of their biggest mistakes is they're always – they don't mitigate the worst case scenario. They plan on the best case scenario. What's ever changed there?
I think that's the thing, where even if Zach Eflin and Grayson Rodriguez were healthy and going in, we were still talking heading into spring training – our concerns about the starting rotation, and that's with those top two guys healthy.
Orioles off.
Oh yeah, and Eflin coming back, and then Eflin staying off the IL. Those are two different things as well.
Orioles off today. They lose 2 of 3 to the Royals. They're in Minnesota tomorrow. We'll talk with Rocabacco coming up at 5:30 about the Orioles. But coming up next, let's look at the rest of Major League Baseball, and it's Beltway Ben's Twib Notes. In Twib Notes, old friend Kyle Stowers continues to rake. The Red Sox bullpen stinks, and the Rays take 2 of 3 in the Bronx against the Yankees. It's Twib Notes next here on The Fan.
Swinging a ball, lifted in the air, deep left center field! Stowers, no way! A walk-off grand slam! This kid is unconscious!
You don't rise to the occasion, you sink to the level of your preparation. And I train that. I train that type of velo. I train very hard. So I was ready for the at-bat. I knew I was going to be getting the at-bat. And that was just what I told myself, that you don't rise to the occasion, you sink to the level of your preparation. And sincerely, like whatever happened, it was out of my hands.
Kyle Stowers, walk-off grand slam there. For the Miami Marlins, former Oriole, 2-home run game, including that one against Mason Miller, 102, moving to the right-handed batter's box that he shoots the other way. It's been a great start to the season for him, and the Orioles' return is getting hit around in AAA.
He's got 4 home runs and 10 RBIs in the last 3 games.
Orioles are really bad with runners in scoring position, right?
Yeah.
Kyle Stowers, OPS, runners in scoring position, nearly 1,200, guys. 1,200. 2 outs, runners in scoring position. OPS over 1,300. Late and close situations, 983.
And again, that's the best closer in baseball with a multi-run lead throwing 102.
Also, if you want to get to everything in the Orioles' issues, he's 14 for 29 against left-handed pitching as a lefty. So, I mean, if you want to fill the
last
boxes.
Last time I looked, he had a 1,200 OPS against lefties.
It's weird the Marlins let him hit against lefties.
Yeah, how about that?
Towards top of the lineup, too.
Yeah.
And if you're into StatCast data, he's in the 89th percentile in batting run value, 91st percentile in weighted on base average, 88th percentile in expected slug, 95th percentile in barrel percentage, 86th percentile on hard hit percentage, 96th percentile on launch angle sweet spot, 86th percentile in bat speed, something a lot of his other cohorts from that draft class aren't exactly special in, Adley. Could he walk more? Sure. Does he strike out a lot? Well, yeah, because he's actually a left-handed slugger. He's actually a left-handed slugger who slugs, and he slugs lefties and righties.
Now, a team in the AL East who has not been good enough, struggling a little bit after the beginning, is the Red Sox, and their bullpen has been a big reason for that.
Bader sends it high in the air, deep left center field, Duran back at the wall, that's going to be off the wall. Around third base, Correa, he will try and score, the throw will not be made, and Bader delivers in the eighth inning. Doubles off the monster, it's 4-3.
4.5 ERA for the Red Sox bullpen since April 20th, the fourth highest in the MLB. And since the middle of April, April 15th, medium and high leverage spots, 110 batters faced, the Red Sox have a 7.71 ERA, which is the second highest in the MLB.
Yankees are the only team in the AL East above 500.
No, it's not a. I mean, again, we've said this for years. This division's been down, and instead they've peed on their legs. They being the Orioles front office. We thought the Red Sox bullpen would be an issue coming in. We wondered, Chapman had a great start, but we wondered, could he really do what Jansen did? They had some issues in the back end last year, and certainly that seems to be the case. Crochet had pitched well, but the pitch count got up. He left with a multi-run lead. Those of us who were on Boston first five minus 1.5, cha-ching, cha-ching, plus money. And then the Twins, not a great hitting team, although we'll see what they do against the Orioles. Yeah, came back and took it to them. Now, the Red Sox, we know, have been a very aggressive front office. Are they, like, David Robertson's still out there, right?
Yeah.
Like, do they sign Robertson? Do they make a trade for a relief pitcher? You know, do they go and get the Heasley or something like that? I wouldn't shock me if they do. Our buddy Jim Bowden's got a column out in The Athletic about teams that should do something, and he's got the Orioles trading for Joe Ryan. I'll believe it when I see it. And he's got the Red Sox addressing their bullpen, which they'd better do.
Justin Slayton had been their best reliever the past year and a half. Hadn't given up an earned run in April. It comes to May, he's given up 5 and 2 outings.
Oof, gotcha.
Next, staying in the AL East, Yankees have lost 2 straight series, and the Rays took them down this time.
10 games on the road. There's a high fly ball, well tagged, and that ball's got some carry, and that baby's gone. Home run into the bullpen. Well, he turned things around right there on the road, hitting his 5th home run of the season.
Lose on Friday against Max Fried, who's been awesome. But then Littell throws a gem Saturday, and the Yankees go with the bullpen game. Yarbrough gives them 4, and not enough. And then Will Warren gets shelled Sunday, and the Rays take 2 of 3 in the Bronx.
And they've won 7 of 11.
I can't figure the Rays out. I kind of thought they were fugazi. Then they played 13 in a row at home, and they kind of started hitting in that ballpark. And I'm like, then they... I don't think it'll go. And then they took it to the Padres and then pooped the bed the rest of that road trip until they do this to the Bronx. And now they're about to go home, I think, for another lengthy homestand. We know this. They don't quit.
No.
They're pesky.
They're cockroaches.
They're cockroaches. And they do hit in that AA ballpark they play in. They know how to produce runs. And that's a front office that is very forward-thinking, that will try different things and be creative in an attempt to spur them on. And you won't be hearing any rumors about Kevin Cash being out there no matter what happens. So their culture must be pretty good.
And against, long track record.
Against righties, they have the ability to put Simpson in the leadoff spot and move back Diaz, who's a great hitter, but they move him to the 3 spot, and that's helped him a ton. Also, one more thing before we finish. Friday night, Scooble gives up a home run to Neto in the first inning.
Yes.
Neto bat flips it, admires it. It's fine. Scooble walks to the back of the mound.
Yep.
He strikes him out, tells him to sit down, and then it's an issue.
Then bench is clear.
Like, this is my... I love bat flipping. I love trash talk. You can bat flip when you hit the home run, but don't get butt hurt when I tell you to go sit down. That was weak.
Yeah, if you give, you got to take.
Well, and Scooble pretty much shoved. He really did poke the bear there, though, with the first inning home run.
They're calling Kerry Carpenter Kerry Bonds because he is on fire lately.
Tigers, pretty good ball club.
22-13. Orioles are lucky they're not in the AL Central.
My best bets in the futures market were Tigers to make the playoffs, Tigers to win that division, Orioles under 87 wins.
Feeling pretty good about yourself right now.
It's very early.
Yeah.
I'm just pointing out facts. This is no feeling.
Yeah.
I'm just pointing out facts. You don't count your chickens before they hatch.
Orioles off today. They will be in action in Minnesota tomorrow. We get back to the Ravens coming up next
week. The night before week 1, that year when Sashi was the GM of the Browns and they didn't win any games, he probably felt pretty good the night before week 1.
Yeah.
How does Sashi get a stray?
Wow. It's not a stray. Yeah.
Everybody feels good before
opening night. It doesn't matter how you feel. It just matters how the results. I'm just pointing out results. I have no feelings.
Everybody feels good before the starts of season. Hey, Ravens.
About to go 0-16.
We'll talk to Jonas Schaefer coming up at 4 from the Baltimore Banner, get his thoughts on rookie minicamp. But we're going to hear from Aeneas Peebles and Malachi Starks. They spoke to the media yesterday. We'll hear from them next here on The Fan.
No, he threw me off with it. But it was an honor, you know, and I don't take it lightly. I'm happy I got to do it, and hopefully I can do it again.
That was Malachi Starks talking about breaking the huddle at training camp. And Ben, I don't want to speak for you, but you were the one of the 4 of us that were there yesterday. You said one of the things you did notice, it was pretty clear he's an alpha kind of looking, even at rookie minicamp, looking like a bit of a leader.
He was moving guys around regularly, every single play, every snap. It was pretty clear that, and him and Mike Green are the 2 youngest guys out there, 21 years old. It's crazy.
Malachi Starks, when they drafted him, I think it was Eric who mentioned they had him in and they were talking about plays and he was pointing everything out on the board. Like, they were amazed at how his mind could work even at this young.
Yeah. And we know from having the linebacker on last week that they didn't get their
Teddy Buchanan.
Yeah, Buchanan. They didn't get their
tablets.
Devices. Yeah, their tablets until the weekend. But you know, these days you can find a lot of stuff on. You at least find plays and stuff. You know, at clips, not the diagnosis of the play, mm-hmm. but like he could watch a highlight film of Ed Reed in a Ravens uniform, no problem.
For sure. And with Starks starting every single year at Georgia, he was there when Monk was there, when they won a national championship his freshman year. To start as a freshman on a national championship team, like that's
team
very
loaded
impressive.
With talent too. But like everybody on that defense basically got drafted. More from Malachi Starks, advice he'd give someone next year.
Yeah, I'd say just really dive into it. You move so much faster in the game of football when you know what people around you are doing. So just being able to kind of pick up on what your other safety is doing, and then your corner, and then your nickel, and then the linebackers. And then when you get to the front, you know you're fit. And then at that point, you know defense. So now you're just playing with the offense. Okay, what's the offense giving me? They're going to give me this. How can I beat that? You know, so at a certain point, you just get to where you're playing defense, but you're playing with the offense while you're playing defense.
It's pretty amazing to hear him talk about all that stuff and realize he's a kid who's never played an NFL football game. Not many people get it that quickly, but he seems to understand everything that's going on around him.
Well, and again, it's not like he's got to come in and be the savior either. Like he's got to come in and know the defense, which he will, and know it from multiple position groups, which he will. And he's got other people there who I think by the time camp starts, Kyle Hamilton will be paid like best of breed. Yeah. Roquan's being paid like best of breed. Matabike is being paid like best of breed. He's got other people in there who really kind of bear that weight. He just has to be a strong complementary football player coming in.
Well, just focus on the secondary. You have two all pros in Kyle Hamilton and Marlon Humphrey, and then you have a first round pick from last year in Nate Wiggins. Like a lot of pedigree.
Yes, yeah. More from Malachi Starks speaking at rookie minicamp yesterday. Talks about the camp.
Yeah, like I said earlier, it was a really good day. Guys had really good energy. Everybody was on time to meetings. I told them just to be on time again and come out tomorrow with the same energy and just keep having fun. You know, we're all here chasing our dreams, so we're all supporting each other and just, you know, keep it going.
He told everybody to be on time. Pretty interesting. Like, be on time for meetings. We're going to go out there and have fun.
Look, this kid, from an intangible standpoint, has everything they could want and more. I mean, there was a reason that goes beyond just what you see on film, why they were licking their lips and so sort of hugging themselves over the opportunity to take him that deep in the first round. He's going to remind them, I'm sure, of some pretty damn good football players they've had in that building before. And I'm just talking about as a, like, from the mental aspect of being a football player and from a work ethic and a preparation and a film study and a football savant sort of standpoint. It's clear he that's who he is.
That's what I was going to say. It just seems like a player that's just all about ball. And that's someone that... That's a John Harbaugh guy.
Yeah.
That is a John Harbaugh guy.
One more from Malachi Starks before we go to Aeneas Peebles, and he talks about his expectations.
Just kind of coming in, we had talked about it. Just, you know, being that leader, keep being myself who I was when I came from the University of Georgia. So just being able to continue to be myself and really dive into being a pro and bring guys along with me as well, I think it's huge for me.
It's funny to hear a rookie talk like that. And Jason, I thought you made a good point. He doesn't have to do too much because of what he's got around him, assuming health.
Yeah, he this makes sense across the board. It is on paper and in the locker room and in the meeting room as best anyone could size something up before someone really starts their professional career at a level they've never played at before. It would seem to be a seamless fit.
For sure. And with him, it's just one player, but it's a domino effect on this defense because it frees up Kyle Hamilton. Heck, if you want to even throw another DB alongside Roquan Smith, you have that possibility as well. It just makes this defense so much more versatile now that he's in the fold.
And Jason, with all these secondary pieces, we made a point last week, I think it bears repeating, like how often are there going to be two linebackers on the field because they've got all these chess pieces they can use?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to depend on the development of some of these others. It's going to depend on Buchanan and Simpson at linebacker. It's going to depend on Ardarius picking up where he left off and Starks being ready for it and them embracing three safety dime packages. How much position flexibility is there with some of these young men? I don't think it'll be as much as last year. Yeah. It certainly won't be as much as the year when Queen played like 99.4% of the snaps and Roquan played like 99.9%.
Let's go from first-round pick Malachi Starks to sixth-round pick Aeneas Peebles, and Aeneas talks about the chip on his shoulder from his draft.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same chip I've had my whole life, whether that had to do with the NFL draft or whether that had to do with, you know, just how I came up in high school. You know, I just feel like I've always had that chip on my shoulder, and, you know, it's helped to get me here. So, you know, I just continue to let that fuel me.
Aeneas Peebles, named after, he said during his presser yesterday, former Hall of Fame corner Aeneas Williams, talking about the fact that, you know, he had to wait a long time and he's got a chip now because of it.
Well, unfortunately for him, he happened to be in what looks like a generational D-tackle draft with a lot of guys who would just have a different build than him, who look more pro-ready from a size and length standpoint. This league is becoming dominated by in the trenches, size and length and wingspan, and that's not how this young man is put together.
But even with all that being said, Jason, it's not too often outside of Looper, who was a six-round pick, where Looper, a six-rounder comes in and he might be able to carve out a role because they didn't do anything in front of him at the position,
despite all the opportunities.
You got Brody, you got Jones, Matabike, and we expect them to bring in at least one veteran. He could be up on game day and in the rotation.
Sure.
Aeneas Peebles yesterday talking about his first taste of life in the NFL.
I mean, I just say it's everything I dreamed of. You know, it really takes me back, you know, when I was a young kid, you know, playing in the backyard, you know, envisioning all those, you know, fourth and longs and, you know, third and 15s, you know, for the wins, like just being in here and being in this amazing football environment and this, you know, culture of winning, it just takes me back to when I was a child. So I'm loving it.
Third and 15, it's interesting he mentioned that because that's probably when he'll see time on the football field. If he plays, it's going to be as a designated pass rush kind of guy.
Yeah.
He's not going to be out there on rundowns.
Yeah, this isn't a Michael Pierce.
I think it's going to be really interesting to see how many personnel packages he's in and even what they ask him to do in the preseason.
One more from Aeneas Peebles. His nickname is Fub. Tell us about your nickname.
Well, you know, I got the nickname Fub when I was a little kid. So, you know, I rarely even hear my government name nowadays. But, you know, when I was a baby, I was fat and chubby. So they always called me Fubby growing up. And, you know, now that I got older, it got short in the Fub. So, you know, I ran with it.
Everybody calls him Fub, Jason.
Not his government name.
Not his government name.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. The coaches are going to call him Fub.
I bet you if he starts making plays, they call him Fub.
I mean, I'm sure in the locker room, like now that this is out there, I'm sure some of his teammates will call him Fub, but I'd be interested to see if the coaches do.
The bigger question is this.
Will Jerry Coleman call him Fub?
Oh, that's a very good question.
No, not that. I was going to
say. We'll ask him tomorrow.
If Looper catches on, you think Harbaugh's going to call him Looper?
Yeah.
You think so?
That's a sports kind of thing that kind of name.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a huge leap.
Yeah.
No, they're going to do it for the same reasons that I'm doing it.
I'll tell you. I don't know. I could guarantee you if Brandon Hyde was the coach of the Ravens, he'd be calling him Looper.
He would. Yes,
he'd absolutely be.
They'd all have Chico Bales Bondsman t-shirts.
Yes, they would. They would. Hey, coming up next, it's T-Bone time. TMI with TIM. What you got?
I was at CFG Bank Arena on Saturday, saw Linkin Park. It was a phenomenal concert. And no one's Chester Bennington. No one ever will be Chester Bennington. But Emily Armstrong, their new singer, a phenomenal voice, a powerful voice. But I was thinking, what is a band that you have seen that you wish you would have saw with the original bandmates. 410-583-1057. What band did you see that you wish you saw with the original bandmates? 410-583-1057. We'll get into it next on The Fan.
It's T-Bone time, TMI with TIM, and the floor is yours.
I love Linkin Park. Linkin Park is definitely one of my favorite bands. And when I saw that they were initially coming to CFG Bank, we, of course, have a little agreement with them. We're tight with them. So I hit up our boss immediately and said, yeah, I need a pair of tickets.
There you go, Bone.
And
Bone advocating for Bone.
It never happens.
It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen often, but it happened in this instance. And I unfortunately never got the chance to see Linkin Park with Chester Bennington. It's actually really, really sad. I had tickets to see Linkin Park and Blink 182, and it was legitimately within 7 to 10 days after Chester Bennington tragically took his own life. But when I saw that Linkin Park, of course, they're back with Emily Armstrong, and they've been back for, let's say they went on tour, I don't know, a few months ago or whatever. But I was fired up to see it, and they absolutely did not disappoint. And no one's Chester Bennington, but Emily Armstrong was really, really damn good. Her voice was incredible. The band was incredible. It was easily one of the best concerts that I've ever been to. And if you haven't been to a concert at CFG Bank Arena, go out there.
Oh, yeah.
Since the renovations, it's
sounds much better.
Awesome, awesome venue. So I was asking the question, 410-583-1057. What band did you see that you wish you saw with the original bandmates? 410-583-1057. So that's obviously mine with Chester Bennington. But Jason, what do you got?
Bone, I'm a bit of a stickler when it comes to this stuff, as you might have guessed. So, like, I don't really, like, if I don't think it's really that band anymore, I just don't see them as much as I might have loved them. So it's kind of a bit of a, like, line in the sand that I've drawn. I have, like, seen the Dead Boys, and, you know, Steve Bader's has been dead for 30-some years. So,
you
like,
mean
it's
a member
one
of the
original
Dead Boys
member
was dead?
Well, there's several. Oh. But, like, Cheetah Chrome, the guitarist, is still alive. So, like, Cheetah goes on tour, and they call themselves the Dead Boys. I mean, is it really the Dead Boys? No, they play Dead Boys songs. They also play in front of, like, 150 people, and you get in for, like, $12. So,
nice.
But, like, I'll go see Cheetah Chrome play anywhere, anytime. I've seen him acoustic, seen him by himself, whatever. But, like, most of the bands that I wish I could have seen, they'll never tour again, or,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, I saw, like, REM, and then, like, REM did a little thing without Bill Berry, and, like, would I have still seen them without Bill Berry? I would have. Would I see REM without Michael Stipe and Mike Mills? And, I mean, no. Like, and I don't think that will ever happen again. I said I wouldn't see Guns N' Roses again, but I had seen them with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they reformed, I didn't see any of the, like, the Axl Chinese Democracy crap. Like, I wasn't gonna, like, when they had the guy with the KFC bucket on his head.
Yeah, Buckethead. Buckethead.
And even when they reformed, like, the first
what
tour.
What about the Stone Temple Pilots guy?
They had Scott Weiland?
Scott Weiland was, like, ahead of Guns N' Roses for, like, a minute, wasn't he?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure
he sang in Slash's Snake Pit. Yeah, yeah. I think he sang in a separate thing with Slash, one of Slash's offshoots. But, like, I said I wouldn't see them ever again because Izzy Stradlin wasn't in the band. And for me, Izzy Stradlin was the soul and the heart of Guns N' Roses. But Izzy wasn't on the gravy train. And so I did go see them at Madison Square Garden without Izzy Stradlin.
And Scott
Adler.
And
they were
awesome.
They were awesome. They're never letting Adler back.
No.
But this was still with, like, this was still,
it's
I think,
funny
with,
that I know names from
this
a band
was with Matt Sorum, though. This was not with the other drummer who replaced Matt Sorum, who they just got rid of, yeah, I think, 2 weeks ago. I knew they were never letting Adler back in. And they were really good, but they definitely would have been better with Izzy Stradlin. And I went one time, and frankly, I got the tickets for free at Madison Square Garden, so I'd have been an idiot.
That's cool.
Yeah, they were comps from Live Nation, and they were, like, 10 rows from the stage.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. So, but I am, like, the wrong guy to ask. Like, okay. Fishbone's touring, and there's no Norwood, and there's no Walter Kibbe. No. You don't have Dirty Walt. You don't have Norwood.
No,
that's
Dirty
not
Walt.
Fishbone. I'm glad Angelo Moore is still touring. Make your money, Angelo. Like, by all means. But like, no Dirty Walt, no Norwood, that ain't Fishbone.
Ken, do you have one?
Oh man, that was a lot. Wow, I don't know. I told you
from the onset, you knew what you were stepping into when you did this
Saturday, and you were like, "Oh yeah."
I told you. So I preface by saying that my musical taste is a little different than Jason's.
Yeah,
I've seen Journey with my guy from the Philippines.
Yeah. He's really good.
Yes, he sounds
right?
just like.
You never saw him with Steve Perry.
That's where I'm getting it.
So that counts. So that's what he's talking about.
I wish I would have seen him with Steve Perry.
The guy
from the Philippines literally sounds just like Steve Perry. I think they found him on YouTube.
Yeah.
But it would have been cool to see Journey with Steve Perry. I think that would be my answer.
Absolutely.
Back in the day, I saw Attila, but it was after Billy Joel stole the other guy's wife and went solo. Yeah. So I saw Attila, but I never saw him with Billy Joel.
Yeah.
I just saw the other guy he left in the
dust.
They
still said Attila, though?
He was still touring as Attila.
Nice.
I was like 2 years old, or maybe I was negative two.
We got a lot of...
What year did Attila break up?
I don't know.
When Billy Joel stole the guy's wife. True story. Look,
never,
stole
never's happened in rock and roll.
Two-person band. Yeah. Stole the guy's wife, went solo.
410-583-1057. I have a couple callers. Ed is in Towson. Ed, you're on the fan.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey there.
I went to see, in Camden, New Jersey, of all places, and Earth, Wind & Fire and Chicago. And, of course, Maurice White, I think that was the lead singer, Earth, Wind & Fire, and Peter Cetera were not there. Now, the brass was off the chain.
Sure.
Meaning the horns were good. But it's a little bit different without the lead singer. And so my sister saw them, you know, with Cetera and with Maurice White, but I wish I'd have seen them with those guys because it definitely made a difference. Musicians, as far as musicians, excellent. But as far as the lead singers, totally different, man.
Was it Philip Bailey doing all the vocals?
Philip Bailey does do a lot. Yeah. And Peter Cetera wasn't the original. Like, when you hear, like, what's that song, 801 or 6-4 or whatever?
That was Steve.
That's the early Chicago or Saturdays in the Park. That's not Peter Cetera.
Let's grab one more. Gary's in Rosedale. Gary, you're on the fan.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
Good.
I have seen every iteration of Megadeth, the original lineup.
Mm.
With
really?
Both Dave's and Marty Friedman. I've seen Marty Friedman separately. I even asked my wife to marry me to Megadeth concert.
Wow.
Very romantic.
It is.
Yeah, she loved it.
Yes.
Is Mustaine? This
is the original.
So how I haven't even paid attention. So it's Dave Mustaine and who now? Is there like...
Now it's Megadeth. It's just Dave Mustaine and everybody's with.
Gotcha.
Okay. Bummer. All right. Thanks for the call, Gary.
That's very interesting. Yeah. Is there anything more romantic than getting engaged at a Megadeth concert?
A lot of people have texted in Pantera, Queen with Adam Lambert.
Queen with Adam Lambert is another.
I've seen both iterations of Pantera. Obviously, it's not. If you're looking for like fill-ins, you could do a whole hell of a lot worse for what Pantera's done, considering two of the original members are dead.
Yeah, you've opened the door for me. I've never seen Pantera in concert, but as I like to bring up when they come up, I did see them at Shotgun Willie's in Denver, Colorado.
And that was, I think, all the original members.
Yes, the original members. And I was like,
I think that was around Vulgar Display of Power.
Like 98,
you got everybody.
So,
Dimebag, the whole kit and caboodle.
That was fun. Coming up next here on the program, rookie minicamp going on. What did Jonas Schaefer think of what he saw yesterday? He covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Banner. He joins us next.